Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly.
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio, chance where we let down what's left of my hair, loosen the tie, smoke up and relax. Good to see the folks in the chat room today. Visit us at MJAgenda.com and click into the live window on YouTube, and you can get into our YouTube chat. Love having you here. I get a lot of feedback from the chat. We've also got a live phone line. Really, we do. It's back. We have a live phone line at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565, LEGAL-MJ. And, you know, sad, last night we lost Professor Stephen Hawking, the author of Brief History of Time and so many other books. That History of Time is one of my favorites. You know, I was always a nerd. I was always a geek. Grew up watching Carl Sagan's Cosmos. I was always into that stuff. I've read literally everything Robert Heinlein ever wrote, like by age, 15, I think. And some of those books, young boys shouldn't have been reading. But anyway, so it's sad that we lose Professor Stephen Hawking. And then, of course, today, for geeks out there like me, is notable because today is Pi Day. 3.14, right? 3.14 pi. And of course, pi time is 3.14, you know, March 14th at 1:59:26 a.m. Because then, you know, you got your digits of pi, right? So Neil deGrasse Tyson on his Twitter feed offers up a nice geeky stat about Pi Day. 33 is the number of pi digits we required to manifest all 10 numerals at least once. What does that mean? What does that mean? All right, let me read pi to you, right? 3.1415926535897323846264338327950. That's the 33rd digit. You had to go all the way to 33 digits before you got all 10 digits, right? There wasn't a zero in pi until you get all, because every other number is in pi, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9. It wasn't until you get to 33rd that you get a zero. And so, you know, there's that. I guess, you know, that's cool, right? Yeah. So let's shift gears back into the radical rant, because I had so much to rant about that I ran out of time on Governor Butch Otter, this guy. And I know a bunch more stories about Butch Otter that I'm not telling, because, like, let's just say my dad and Butch Otter were drinking buddies at some point in life. So there's some interesting tales. But anyway, we had got you up to the point where the Idaho legislature, which had overwhelmingly in 2013 said marijuana shall never be legal for anybody for any reason, came back 2 years later, which they have a session every 2 years, right? They came back 2 years later, next session, voted overwhelmingly, not as overwhelmingly, but pretty overwhelmingly, to pass CBD oil. The problem was they didn't pass it with enough overwhelmingness, that it's even a word, to override a veto, which Butch Otter did. Butch Otter vetoed a CBD oil law, and here was his veto statement. Part of it said, "I don't know what more I or senior members of my administration could have done to help legislators understand our strong opposition to this legislation. Both the House and Senate were told by the Office of Drug Policy, the Department of Health and Welfare, and the Idaho State Police, as well as prosecutors and local law enforcement officers from throughout Idaho, that there were too many questions and problems and too few answers and solutions in this bill to let it become law. And by the way, that's not how Butch Otter sounds. I just like to do Butch Otter as like an ignorant Western character. So that's just my Butch Otter voice. Yeah, what does a masculine sea mammal sound like anyway, right? All right, so here's the thing. So just like now when we hear Chairman Hyder saying law enforcement doesn't want the bill, prosecutors don't want the bill, drug policy doesn't want the bill, the same people didn't want the bill in 2015. And so Otter vetoed it. So now we've got Otter, one guy standing in the way of an entire state getting access to CBD oil for sick kids. Now we got Hyder kind of protecting his ass, keeping Butch Otter from having to go out. Now, this is Otter's last term. He's out at the end of this year. He's term limited, right? So Otter wants to ride off into the sunset without any more hassles. He's not much of a worker. He's kind of a lazy bastard. He just wants to ride off in the sunset and be good old Butch and not have any scandals, right? And the CBD oil thing is just one of the few things where the people of Idaho are not with him. So he doesn't want that embarrassment. So now he's trying to get Hyder to protect his ass from it. Now, the maddening thing about this is that Otter wasn't always this way. I grew up in Idaho. I've seen the rise of Butch Otter. I have seen his political career. First of all, back in 1978, I was 10 years old. Butch Otter was running for governor. Now, the great work done in Reason Magazine, bringing up some of these quotes. And the links are at my RadicalRust.com page if you want to find, you know, read it in more in depth. But in 1978, Butch Otter said, quote, "If a person of his own free will wants to use marijuana, I question whether the government has any propriety in telling him he can't." End quote. That's used marijuana. That's not medical marijuana. That's not CBD oil. That's 1978 Butch Otter. Now, understand, by 1978 was the height of the decriminalization phase in America. And Idaho is a very libertarian state. Butch always been kind of a libertarian guy, which is, you know, government, states' rights, get the government out of my business. So, yeah, back in 78, he was saying government had no business interfering with someone that wants to use marijuana. But yeah, now you could say, come on, Russ, that's 1978. That's 40 years ago. All right. Fast forward to 2006. 2006, Butch Otter's running for governor again. He told Reason Magazine, quote, "I still support medical marijuana. Some of these people, the only way they can get relief is by smoking marijuana." End quote. Not CBD oil, folks. Medical marijuana, 2006. No excuse for him not to know what the hell medical marijuana was by 2006. But somehow, by 2015, he's issuing a veto statement that he's standing by his drug czar and others who believe that allowing epileptic kids to use a non-psychoactive cannabis oil could hurt the kids and endanger the public. Yeah, this is what Idaho has to deal with. Now, interestingly enough, this could be an issue that actually divides Idaho's Republican Party. I mean, we don't know about the House bill, whether or not this gets out of Hyder's committee or not. I mean, he issues his mea culpa for breaking the rules on the closed meeting, but he can come back in open meeting and probably kill it, right? So we don't know. But even if it did get through and pass and got to the governor's desk, it seems like Otter is determined to veto it again. There was a recent event in Firth, Idaho. Not first. Firth. Firth, Idaho. Go forth to Firth. Yes. So in Firth, Idaho, he was asked about these bills that were sitting on his desk and what he might want to sign. And Otter said, "Well, it's never been my design to say I'm going to veto a bill or I'm going to sign a bill." And then he started rattling off a few examples, like, you know, he'd worry about a legalized marijuana bill. He'd worry about a cannabidiol bill. And that's when this legislator sitting next to him said, "Hey, you know, House just passed a cannabidiol bill." And Otter said, "Well, I vetoed it once." So Otter's going to ride out in the sunset. If he has to veto this thing again, he will, because he's in bed with law enforcement and drug rehab in his state. He's owned, apparently. Somehow the libertarian from 1978 and the medical marijuana proponent from 2006 got a talking to by donors, I assume. So now he's term limited. He's on his way out. He's got a lieutenant governor that he wants to put in his place, Brad Little. And of course, got to understand the Republican primaries in Idaho are the election. Like, a Democrat hasn't been a governor in Idaho since 1990, hasn't been elected governor since 1990. So this CBD issue, though, is not going to go away in Idaho. See, Idaho citizens have that power of citizen initiatives. They can gather up signatures and pass a CBD oil law or even pass a medical marijuana law. Could happen. So if Otter is in the pocket of rehab and law enforcement and comes out and is forced to veto a CBD oil bill, a popular bill, that might be political fallout for his lieutenant governor. Again, Otter doesn't care. He wants to ride off in the sunset, but he wants to lay a groundwork for his lieutenant governor to be governor. And his lieutenant governor, this Brad Little, he's going to have to be in conflict with somebody. He's either going to have to be in conflict with the majority of Idahoans by backing, because this will be, get brought up in a debate or something, right? So is he going to be in conflict with the majority of Idahoans who want sick kids to get relief from epilepsy? Or does he want to be in conflict with his own boss who vetoed it as he's trying to take his boss's job? Which way is he going to go? And there's going to be pressure on this. Other Idaho Republicans that are running have brought it up. The current congressman from Idaho, Raul Labrador, is challenging Little in that Republican primary, and he criticized the state senator for trying to kill it in secret. Labrador said, quote, "If this administration has real valid reasons to oppose the CBD oil legislation, they should present them in a public open forum. They should defeat ideas in committee, not behind a committee chairman to avoid the public debate," end quote. Now, that's a little lukewarm. That's not Labrador saying he's pro-CBD or anti-CBD, but he is saying it should get a hearing. Another GOP hopeful, Tommy Ahlquist, he released a statement that said, quote, "Since day one, I have supported the legalization of CBD oil that helps sick people as long as the THC is removed and it's prescribed by a doctor." And the other thing, you know, if you want to look at this from a devil's advocate point of view, that makes this interesting, is from their point of view, if they're trying to kill medical, it would be in their best interest to pass a CBD oil law to take some of the heat away from activists who might want to pass whole plant medical marijuana. A wise politician would sign that bill. But nobody's going to confuse Butch Otter with a wise man.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Russ channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/radicalruss. You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
This is bullshit. Like Cypress Hill cancer this year.
Learn more at mjagenda.com. Today in the United States, polls regularly show that 3 in 5 Americans support the legalization of adult access to cannabis. Support for medical marijuana regularly approaches and exceeds 9 in 10 Americans. But after 80 years of failed prohibition, the government wants to bring back the worst excesses of the drug war 1980s. Hamots like Tiddly Burgess, you know? It's not tubular.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Toker Talk Radio. Just picked up a post here on Civilized Life. It's a prediction on the five states that will legalize marijuana last. Their predictions are number 5, Nebraska, 4, Wyoming, 3, Idaho, 2, Indiana, 1, Alabama. Not bad. I always give Kansas number 1. I always think that Idaho's number 2 and Kansas is number 1 because Kansas doesn't have an initiative. And Idaho does. But, you know, we'll see. Everybody's got their own list of who's going to be last to legalize. And speaking of Alabama, here's a story. Oh, boy, this one. This got all sorts of good stuff in it. Been going around from a few different sources, mostly AL.com. Some great reporting by Connor Sheets down there. There's this sheriff down there. Name's Todd Entrekin. Todd Entrekin. And our story begins in mid-February, just, you know, about a month ago. Connor Sheets from AL.com reported that there was this 20-year-old man named Matt Qualls, and he was working for a landscaping company that had been hired to work at the sheriff's house. So when Matt got paid, the checks that he got paid with said, Sheriff Todd Entrekin Food Provision Account, in the heading. And then right below it, you know, the address for his house, right? So Matt told AL.com, Matt told this reporter, quote, I saw that in the corner of the checks. It said food provision, and a couple people I knew came through the jail, and they said they got meat maybe once a month, and every other day it was just beans and vegetables. I put two and two together and realized that that money could have gone towards some meat or something. End quote. Great kid, right? 20-year-old kid. And I can say kid, I'm 50. 20-year-old guy says, you know, hey, wait a minute. You're paying me to mow your lawn with money that's supposed to feed prisoners. And I got friends that done some time and they're eating, you know, crap. So what's up with this, right? So they start doing some investigation. Reporters start doing some digging. And they found, that's in my accent's coming in, they found, I could do this whole thing as Jeff Sessions. I did not believe that marijuana is going to help. Sheriff Entrekin was found, okay, so the first, they find one sheriff who was accused of pocketing $110,000 from a fund for feeding prisoners. And then they find this kid, Matt, who says, yeah, I got paid by Sheriff Entrekin, something similar. And they go look up Sheriff Entrekin. Sheriff Entrekin pocketed $750,000. Yeah, $750,000 from a fund that was meant to feed prisoners. They found him after they find the other guy that pocketed $110,000 from the fund to feed prisoners. So these sheriffs, they say, we didn't do nothing wrong. We didn't break any law. And they point to this Alabama law written before World War II. And it's a law that says that you're going to have this fund for feeding your county jail inmates. And after you use that money to feed the inmates, whatever's left over goes to the sheriff. Well, you know how that's going to turn out, right? So the way the law is written, these guys are skimping on feeding the prisoners. They're feeding them the cheapest shit they can possibly feed them so that there's so much money left over, and then they're just pocketing it. According to an attorney from the Southern Center for Human Rights that's suing over this, he says, quote, many sheriffs believe it's legal for them to do this, which, of course, creates an incentive for sheriffs to spend as little as possible on feeding folks. So we're going to continue this story right after the break. But this Alabama, you won't believe what happens next on this one. After the kid
talk to the media about these checks he was getting for mowing the sheriff's lawn, paid for from jail food money. All right, that sound means it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. I hope you're all feeling safe out there. I know I am. Smoke them if you got them. We're back right after this.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
What are you people? On dope?
Learn more at MJAgenda.com. The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at MJAgenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
They said acid would help me forget my problems. There's a separate universe inside each and every one of us. You kill him. I'm not gonna kill him. Reality is the prison of the mind, and when we die, black holes of our mind open up, and we're forced through the gates to infinite insanity. They said LSD would help me forget my problems. They lied. Find out the truth about LSD. Drugfreeworld.org.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
I don't know if you've seen the photos or the video of the students who are walking out today in protest of gun violence across the country. And I know it. I'm not going there. I know. About half my listeners are like, oh, no, gun grabber. No, just hold on. Not going there. I just want to remark on the activism of it. Just how cool it is to see students protesting. you know, getting involved, having a concern and putting feet on the street. And I sure hope that we get that from our own people, adult people, as things are bearing down here in the Trump maladministration, because I've just picked up some of the Twitter newswire here, some of the rumors going around that Trump is itching to fire Jeff Sessions, move Scott Pruitt from EPA over to Attorney General, have Pruitt fire Mueller and end the special counsel investigation, and be able to point to the House Republican conclusion of there being no collusion and saying, see, nothing to see here, move along. It's getting scary, folks, and as the elections heat up and as more Democrats keep winning, Conor Lamb won that. It looks like he won that election in the Pennsylvania district. It's going to get interesting because if this Trump crime family feels like they're cornered as they get toward the midterm elections, if they see a blue wave that's going to turn the House Democratic, if even all the Russian meddling that they won't do anything to stop and are actually probably suborning isn't enough to even turn the tide. Ooh, how scary could this stuff start to get, man? Mm. Well, let me get back to what we were talking about, this Alabama story. So we got to the point where this 20-year-old guy talked to the media about he got a check when he was landscaping for this sheriff, and he was paid from the Sheriff Todd Entrekin Food Provision Fund, which is, you know, money to feed prisoners. So we got you that far, right? 6 days after that media story hits, there was an anonymous tip reported on the odor of marijuana coming from Matt's apartment. Anonymous tip, I'm sure. This kid who went to tell on the sheriff, and as a pot smoker, nobody'd ever noticed it before. Nobody'd ever called it in before. But 6 days later, there's an anonymous tip of marijuana coming from his apartment. So the city police, he's in a place called Rainbow City. And by the way, this is all happening in Etowah County, Alabama. Gadsden is like the major city in there, right? So he's in Rainbow City. The Rainbow City cops show up, and members of the Etowah County Drug Enforcement Team, which is an interagency team that also includes, you guessed it, members of the sheriff's department. When they show up, they saw marijuana. When the friend opens the door, they could see marijuana, according to the police report, that is. And they went in. And so now Matt and his friends, well, they're young pot-smoking guys, and they're cooperating with police, as pot smokers sometimes do. They shouldn't, but they do. So they're cooperating with law enforcement. They start talking. They say, hey, look, we had a half ounce of weed, you know, 14 grams of weed, got a half ounce of weed. Most of it, now they got a couple buds sitting out to smoke, right? But either most of it, or this half ounce, they mix with 5 cups of butter in a magical butter machine. Now, if you don't know what that is, that's like a crock pot for weed, for making like a can of butter so you can make brownies and cookies and whatever else, right? So we had a half ounce. We put it in the magical butter machine with the butter, you know, whatever. We're not kingpins or anything. So the local police, the Rainbow City Police, charged Matt with marijuana possession misdemeanor. It was a marijuana possession in the second degree misdemeanor, paraphernalia misdemeanor, presumably for having the butter machine or maybe a pipe, who knows, right? And now he did get a felony possession charge, but it was for some non-prescribed Adderall pills. He had some Adderall pills, did have prescription for him. That's a separate kind of thing, right? Well, that would be the end of it, except for the county drug enforcement team. Specifically, Sheriff Todd Entrekin, the man Matt told on, his office piled on more charges. They say, oh, no, this is not second degree marijuana possession of 14 grams. This is felony possession of 1,042 grams of marijuana-infused butter. That's right. Not the weight of the weed, the weight of the entire butter. 1,042 grams. And for our friends of the metric system, you'll know that that means it's over a kilogram. And a kilogram triggers another felony charge in Alabama, felony drug trafficking, for this kid in his apartment with a couple of friends making some can of butter out of a half ounce of weed. Now, under Alabama law, for the misdemeanor, if he's just, you know, going under the charge for the city cops, he might get a year in prison and he might get a $6,000 fine. Probably less, first time offender, that kind of thing, right? But for felony possession, oh, there's a mandatory minimum on that one, year and a day. I don't know why a year and a day, but all right, year and a day. And it couldn't be greater. It could be up to 10 years in prison and a $15,000 fine. Now, the felony drug trafficking charge for the over a kilogram of marijuana, that was really half ounce in five cups of butter. The felony drug trafficking charge would guarantee mandatory minimum 3 years in prison, and the possible range reaches 99 years in prison. A maximum $25,000 fine. And I'm not being hyperbolic about this. There are people in Alabama right now serving what are essentially life sentences. You're never going to see outside again. Serving life sentences for marijuana trafficking. So, just to recap this story, a sheriff fed his prisoners as cheaply as possible so he could buy a $750,000 beach house, and then made sure the man who told on him might spend life behind bars, and this may all be 100% legal in Alabama. Whew.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Research has shown that states that allow adult access to marijuana have rates of drug overdose deaths far lower than the national average. Medical marijuana access is also correlated with doctors prescribing far fewer opioid painkillers and less opioid use by patients. If the government is serious about declaring a national emergency over opioids, it's time to end the failed federal prohibition on marijuana.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Well, today in the Data Mines, we're going to continue with the debunking of Kevin Sabet, the Joker to buy Batman. He's the head of Project Samuel, the Smart Approaches to Marijuana Use, Accept Legalization organization. They're the leading anti-legalization org out there, and they're in Vienna right now at the United Nations. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime is having their commission on narcotic drugs in Vienna, Austria. So he's up there and he's holding a little seminar. Now, if this is like what his thing was in 2014, I went to the UN for their the last summit on this, I think, was it 2014, 2015, whenever it was in New York. And his seminar wasn't a part of the official UN program. What they do is they allow NGOs, non-governmental organizations, what we sometimes call nonprofits, allow them to have rooms at the thing and present their thing, but it's not an official UN thing. I don't know if that's the case with this one, but I do have a copy of their flyer, which was forwarded to me by Jules from the DACA couple out of South Africa. And it had all these red letter warnings or dire statuses about marijuana legalization over the past year, 5 years, how awful things are in Washington and Colorado, right? So in the first hour, I covered Washington State saw a doubling of driving fatalities where marijuana was involved following legalization, right? Where marijuana was involved means someone smoked pot, right? At some point, some time. They weren't necessarily impaired, but they got hit by a car or they wrecked their car and they died. So we covered that one. The next one I want to cover is that second one on the list where Sabet intones, Colorado is now the number one state in the United States for four first-time youth marijuana users. Yeah, that's the I said the typo. He had four in there twice. Four first-time youth marijuana users. Anyway, Colorado is number one state in the United States for first-time youth marijuana users. Okay, so if that stat sounds like what is that? What's good? Huh? Well, it's because Sabet had to go a long way to find a stat in a legal state that made legalization look bad for kids. Because, you know, for the past 3 years, he's been getting barraged by all these studies and stories in the national news media about how, quote, the rate of adolescent marijuana use in Colorado has fallen to its lowest level in nearly a decade, end quote. And how, quote, fewer Washington adolescents are using marijuana since recreational pot sales began in 2014, end quote. Both Washington and Colorado, every story coming out. Kids aren't using anymore. No more kids are using. Kid use is going down. So, what is this stat? This first-time youth marijuana users? Okay, so what it is for an age cohort, what is the percentage of those people who are going to use marijuana for the first time in their life? Doesn't mean that they'll ever use it ever again, or they may go on to be super stoners. Doesn't matter, but you know, your first initiation, sometimes it's called, right? So, in the National Survey for Drug Use and Health for 2015-2016, the latest data available, it does show that 3.84% of Colorado's population age 12 and older will try marijuana for the first time. And that is the tops in the nation. The next one was Alaska, 3.56, and Vermont at 3.08. And those three states, Colorado, Alaska, Vermont, only three states that was over 3%. But here, what Sabet's doing is using a trick I like to call stat in a vacuum. This is a technique where you find one data point that makes your case shine, and then you ignore all the context and history around it that would actually prove your opponent's case. And this is a perfect example of that kind of stat. Yes, Colorado leads the nation in first-time youth marijuana use, so long as you define youth as population age 12 and older. Like, all the way to 100 or 110, right? So why is that significant? Well, if you look at the rest of the table, they've got a column for ages 18 and older. Colorado's 18 and older rate is 2.99%. It's the only state near 3%. It's damn near 3%, right? If you narrow the age range down, there's another column that's 18 to 25. Colorado's rate's 15.97%, almost 16%. Next closest state, Vermont, is at 12.4. So when it comes to 18 to 25s, Colorado's way ahead, the outlier compared to the rest of the nation. So let me boil this down for you. In other words, the reason Colorado's leading the nation for everyone 12 and older is due to more adults in Colorado taking up pot these days because it's legal. Now, let's be fair. If you narrow down, there is a column for just the ages 12 to 17. This is, you know, an opponent would come back and say, look, Russ, even if you disregard the adults, if you don't go by the 12 and older, look at the 12 to 17. If you go 12 to 17, Colorado's second in the nation, only to, I think it was Alaska, or maybe it was D.C. Anyway, it's second. That's bad. It was something like 7%. I can't remember what it was. In fact, the 12 to 17, I have it right here. The 12 to 17 age rate, 12 to 17 age range, their rate of first-time marijuana use, 7.74%. Second in the nation, 7.74%. Ooh, marijuana is bad. But if you go back a year and you look at the prior year, the 12 to 17 rate was 8.16%. And the year prior to that, the first year of legalization, the rate was 9.13%. In other words, Kevin Sabet, while there is still a substantial percentage of kids who are trying pot for the first time in Colorado, that rate's been going down since we've been legalizing marijuana. It's getting fewer and fewer kids are first-time initiates in the use of marijuana. So thank you for the own goal on that one. Sometimes you make my job way too easy. And this is the key with these kind of stats. The first one we did, where it was, oh my God, Washington had a doubling in marijuana-related traffic deaths, right? And then this one with the kids, oh my God, the kids are doing first-time use. They disregard what's happening overall. Like, you can take a look at the stats and look at all the dead drivers and say, okay, well, look, used to be 8% of the dead drivers had pot in them. Now 16% of the dead drivers have pot in them. Or I should say auto fatalities. It's not always drivers. Back in the day, 8% of the auto fatalities had pot in them. Now 16% of the auto fatalities have pot in them. Well, here's the deal. If you smoke pot, it's going to be detectable in your system for a certain number of days. So those of us who are everyday tokers, legalization isn't going to change our rates at all. It's always been where if we wrecked and died and you checked our blood, you'd find pot in it. Back when it was illegal, back when it was medical, now when it's legal, it don't matter. There's pot in our blood. You're going to find it. Boom, we're dead. So that part of the variable, if you're thinking equation style, right, that side is a constant. So what changes, though? What changes is that guy who's the every now and then toker, right? That guy who's, you know, you're drunk at the party and it's late and only the cool people are left and someone whips out a joint and goes, hey, man, pass me that. Smokes a little bit of it, gets some giggles, goes home. He's fine, right? But then he doesn't smoke it again until the next random opportunity that it comes up at some situation, right? Some party. That guy, he gets in a wreck at any random time. Well, yeah, if it's within a week of him smoking that joint, there's pot in his system, but hell, the other, you know, 51 weeks of the year, no, you're not going to find anything in him, right? So that guy, when marijuana becomes legal, and he doesn't have to wait for the odd opportunity of someone bringing up a joint just randomly, and he doesn't have to commit that he's a smoker or nothing because it's illegal, that guy starts going to the pot shop. He can buy his own pot. Now, he doesn't necessarily turn into the everyday toker like me, but maybe he's an every weekend toker. Maybe he's a once a month toker. Regardless, he's toking more often than once a year. So the window in which he could die and his blood come up with pot in it gets much wider. Doesn't mean he's necessarily impaired behind the wheel. And in fact, as we start looking at the other statistics, you start looking at the studies, all of them are coming to the same conclusion. If you control for age and gender, there's no difference between people who have been found to have THC in their system and people who have not. Now, the age and gender thing is important because, yeah, if you just go overall, you find pot correlates with crash risk, but male also correlates with crash risk, and young correlates with crash risk, and young male correlates with pot. So there's a problem. There's a confounding situation here. It's not necessarily that the pot is causing people to crash. It's because a lot of pot smokers are young men, and young men suck as drivers. No offense. It's just actuarial tables. It's just a fact, man. Try to get insurance when you're a young man. I was one. So no offense, but that's the way it is. So all that's happening is when these opponents try to seize on this and they say, oh, the doubling of the rate of the, it was involved with, if you don't want to get into the weeds with it, pardon the pun, there's an easy shutdown. How many traffic fatalities were there this year compared to last year overall? Overall, died from any reason, drunk driving, fell asleep, got hit, whatever. How many overall? And when they're forced to admit, well, there were fewer people who died in Washington State or Colorado, that's tough to come back from. They can try. They will try. They'll say, oh, but see, you know, even if it is getting safer because we have safety belts and more drunk driving patrols, that doesn't mean that the ones who are having pot, if the drunk driving is going down, but then the pot is going up and it's bad. Are fewer people dying? All you need are fewer people dying. All right, when we come back, we got more from Trumple Thinskin. He's adding to his collection. If you saw this rally he had in Pennsylvania and what he had to say about executing drug dealers, it's the latest. I got it next.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z, Cannabis Kamikaze.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Get out of here, Dewey.
What are y'all doing in here?
We're smoking reefer.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Hi, my name is Ricky Williams.
My name is Evan Britton.
My name is Marcus Stelly.
My name is Boo Williams.
My name is Jim McMahon.
My name is Chris Cluey.
My name is Kyle Turley. I played in one of the major North American football leagues.
I have 2 championship rings from that big game we play at the end of the season.
In college, I won a trophy that looks like this.
I was a punter for 8 seasons, and punters are football players too.
I also wrote the name of the commissioner on my headband, and everyone lost their shit.
The men who play American football are subject to a life of injury,
pain,
and disease,
both during and long after their careers are over.
And that's why I smoke pot.
That's why I smoke cannabis.
That's why I smoke weed. That's why I smoked weed when I played.
It has, without a doubt, reduced the amount of pain I live with.
It's my body. I know.
But for some reason, the major North American non-Canadian football league refuses to allow players to use cannabis.
Instead of allowing for safe, natural healing, the sport pushes players towards addictive, narcotic painkillers with serious side effects.
So let's get real, Roger.
Football players should be allowed to use medicinal marijuana.
Without the stigma of it being a banned substance.
Cannabis isn't a drug.
It is a medicine.
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
Your Hector David, PKA Dirtball, Lisa Rutka, Hila Keaton, Allah Or.
It's time for Joker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, as we close up shop here today at Toker Talk Radio, I want to get into some politics that is interesting. This story out on Politico talking about the student walkouts regarding gun control, calls for gun control. Again, I'm not going to go into the right or wrong of that. I want to get into the political gamesmanship of this because it's an interesting, interesting article here in Politico that says, want gun control laws, forget Congress. And it talks about the impasse, how, you know, the students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School said never again. But then, you know, NRA steps in, the politicians back off, you know, and they call for, you know, arming teachers and all this kind of stuff. Right. And so we're getting to that same loggerheads where it's not going to go anywhere. Nothing's going to happen. Right. So the article here says, want stronger gun laws, start creating ballot initiatives. And the example it uses is marijuana. It says majorities, or at least large minorities of the American public, have favored recreational marijuana legalization for a decade, but only recently have mainstream politicians finally begun to get behind legalization. How did marijuana legalization go from being a fringe position to one backed by ambitious national politicians? Marijuana proved it could win at the ballot box. By bypassing the legislative process and taking the case directly to the people through statewide ballot initiatives, marijuana legalization advocates won major victories. Those victories had both a huge policy impact, one-fifth of Americans now live in states which recreational marijuana use is legal, and a major political impact in driving cautious politicians to realize that marijuana could be a winning issue. Advocates of stronger gun laws should adopt a similar strategy. Interesting. And they close by saying, even unsuccessful measures can help galvanize a movement. A California ballot measure to legalize marijuana lost by 7 points in 2010, it's Prop 19. But 6 years later, a similar ballot measure, not quite similar, but passed by double digits. And sometimes just the threat of a ballot initiative can spur reluctant legislators to act. After a credible ballot initiative to legalize medical marijuana started gaining steam in 2016, the Ohio legislature passed its own medical marijuana bill despite Republican control in both chambers. So you're listening, kids? Your lesson, if you're wanting to get gun control passed, take a page out of the marijuana legalization playbook and take it to the state level. Now, the only difference is, of course, marijuana legalization, you're not fighting people who believe they have a constitutional right backed by an organization with millions of dollars to oppose you at the ballot box. So it's going to be a tougher fight. All right, let's close up shop with some more on the marijuana front, because I've been covering Donald Trump talking about how he wants to kill all the drug dealers. And some of the response I get from people is, he can't shut down the marijuana legalization. He can't go after the marijuana industry, blah, 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 blah. I'll cede that point, but don't you care about other people who use drugs? Other drugs? It'd be cool if we were executing meth dealers. Now, look, I know the devastation that meth can have, but you're cool with executing people? I'm not. I don't care what drug we're talking about. And you know, I just worry that, you know, we in the marijuana movement sometimes will demonize what's going on in some other what's going on in with other drugs and think it won't come for us because, well, you know, we're just marijuana. It's safe. And everybody loves us and we're popular. We're making a lot of money. And I still don't want people that are dealing with other issues to have to suffer. So with that in mind, I want to play for you the extended clip. You maybe have heard, you know, cuts of this from Donald Trump's rally in Pennsylvania, his now unsuccessful rally to make sure Connor Lamb didn't win the seat, the Democrat there. Yet another loss. But anyway, Trump was there mostly to campaign for Trump. He didn't say a whole lot about Connor, or a whole lot about Rick Saccone, the candidate. It's mostly, you know, Trump being Trump. I'm going to play this extended clip because you've heard clips of this maybe on the news shows, the political shows, but hearing it in context in the whole of it just makes it even more chilling. This is Donald Trump talking about the death penalty for drug dealers.
The only way to solve the drug problem is through toughness. When you catch a drug dealer, you gotta put them away for a long time. When I was in China and other places, by the way, I said, Mr. President, do you have a drug problem? No, we do not. I said, huh, Big country, 1.4 billion people, right? Not much of a drug problem. I said, what do you attribute that to? Well, the death penalty. So, hey, if you're a drug dealer and you know you're going to get caught and you know that you're going to kill people, you're killing our kids. They're killing our kids. They're killing our kids. They're killing our families. They're killing our workers. You know, we have a hard time. Of the 100 million people, that special group of people, they're great people. They want to work. We have a hard time. A lot of them can't qualify to work in these factories. Chrysler's coming back in. You saw that from Mexico to Michigan. We have companies.
He means can't pass a drug test, folks.
You haven't seen that. I used to tell you that was going to happen, but now it's happening.
Scariest is the reaction of the crowd, how much they love this.
Because of drugs. But I said to the president, I said, so you don't have much of a problem? No. And they had a problem. You know, if you go back 200 years ago and they know all about drugs. It was devastating to China, the opium. Devastating. It destroyed China. And I'm not going to let it destroy us. And there was an article in one of the main papers. Maybe it was the failing New York Times or one of them. And I don't even know where they get it. Because honestly, I don't know that the United States, frankly, is ready for it. They should be ready for it. But at a minimum, you have to give long, tough sentences. But if you go to Singapore, I said, Mr. President, what happens with your drugs? No, we don't have a problem, President. I said, really, why? We have a zero tolerance. And he's not playing games. These guys don't play games. You know, we have a different type of people. They don't play games. I said, how are you doing on drugs? No problem. I said, what do you mean no problem? And that's entertainment. You know, a lot of things are happening. I said, what do you mean no problem? We have a zero tolerance policy. What does that mean? That means if we catch a drug dealer, death penalty. That's it.
Listen to the cheers, folks.
And they don't have a problem. Now, remember this. If somebody goes and shoots somebody or kills somebody, they go away for life and they can even get the death penalty, right? One person. They shoot one person, they get the death penalty. They shoot one person, kill some person, knife one person, the person dies. They get maybe the death penalty or maybe life in prison, no parole, right? Okay? A drug dealer will kill 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 people during the course of his or her life. Thousands of people are killed or their lives are destroyed, their families are destroyed. So you can kill thousands of people and go to jail for 30 days. They catch a drug dealer. They don't even put him in jail. Think of it. You kill one person, you get the death penalty in many states. Or you get life imprisonment. You think of it. You kill 5,000 people with drugs because you're smuggling them in and you're making a lot of money and people are dying. And they don't even put you in jail. They don't do anything. But you might get 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. You might get a year. But you're not going to get. And then you wonder why we have a problem. That's why we have a problem, folks.
Now, I could debunk all that. But I think it sounded better in its original German. Folks, this is the sound of demagoguery. This is the first steps. And I'm a little appalled that the news media isn't covering this a little more seriously as to the way he is demonizing and talking about drug dealers. Now, he's not talking about, you know, GlaxoSmithKline, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, not those guys who've killed thousands and thousands. He's talking about the drug dealers on the street, you know, the ones who, the darker ones. This is how ethnic cleansing pogroms begin, folks. This is the kind of language, and more scarily, the cheering of the crowd that supports it. A very well-armed crowd, I assume. It's all the time, baby. Gotta go.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube.
and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Check me out at RadicalRuss.com, Delta9House.com for Airbnb bookings. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.